There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. And let's see, what's this episode all about? Well, recently I posted onto Facebook a picture, and the picture was a kind of summary of lots and lots of questions which people have discovered on Google Autocomplete. All right, so let me just explain the situation. What is Google Autocomplete? Well, you know when you go on Google, okay? You go onto Google and you want to search for something, and you might type in a couple of letters or a couple of words, and you get a load of options appearing below the search bar. And those options are like what Google thinks that maybe you're looking for. So it completes your search with, you know, previously searched for items. So if you, for example, type in why is, then one of those autocomplete options will be, why is the sky blue? Why is the sky blue? And so Google is like suggesting, completed versions of your question. Meaning, are you looking for this question, for example? Why is the sky blue? You might be looking for, why is Luke's English Podcast so awesome? But if you type in why is, it'll say, why is the sky blue? And those autocomplete suggestions are basically based on very, very common searches. So it seems that why is the sky blue is a very, very common search. So if you just type in why is the sky blue? It seems that lots and lots and lots of people have searched for why is the sky blue. That's why it comes up as one of the options, because those are the most common questions that begin with why is. Now, this is pretty interesting. This is actually pretty interesting because it gives you a little insight into the kinds of questions that people are searching for online. Now, it does depend where you are. For example, if you're using the American version of Google, it will complete questions that have been asked in your area. So they will be American questions. If you're in the UK, it'll complete the question with sort of UK searches. But it's very fascinating because some of the questions which appear in Google Autocomplete are really strange. Now, they're really bizarre, really weird. And you think, what are people thinking? Why are people asking these questions? So some of them are strange. Some of the questions are actually very good questions, I think. You know, they're quite deep questions which start to get really into the heart of some deep existential problems. You know, they say things like, you know, why are people scared of death? Well, that is a big question. That's a big philosophical question, really. So I posted this JPEG, which was a kind of, a montage, I suppose, of lots and lots and lots of these common Google auto-completed questions. And lots of people responded on Facebook with some comments. And so I thought, actually, some of these questions are really interesting. I would quite like to try to answer them. Okay, now I don't consider myself an expert on everything by any means. You know, I'm just a normal guy. I've got a university education. I've travelled a bit. I've read, you know, a fair number of books. I've got, you know, I'm fairly sort of well informed about some things. Also, I just like to philosophize in my own way on questions, right? And I like to have fun. I like to explore different ideas. So I thought I would try and answer some of the questions which have been found on Google Autocomplete. If you want to find the picture, which contains all of these questions, then I suggest that you go to Facebook and go to Luke's English Podcast page on Facebook, and you'll find the post. It was posted by me last Sunday. So that would be, let's see, today's Friday. What's the date today? Goodness me, hold on. Let me just check the date so that you know, so you'll be able to find this post. Today is the 25th of October, Thursday 24th, Wednesday 23rd, Tuesday 22nd, Monday 21st. Sunday the 20th of October 2013 was when I posted this picture on Facebook. So you can go back and find it. I might manage to put this picture onto my website as well. I should just clarify that the picture I found, this picture when I was looking at an article online, and the article kind of deals with a kind of an important issue relating to Google autocomplete, and that's the fact that recently a kind of campaign, an advertising campaign, was launched to try to raise awareness of sexism against women in different countries around the world. So the campaign, let me just tell you a little bit about the campaign before I talk about the autocomplete questions. So the campaign comes from UN Women, and the campaign basically is a series of pictures with women's faces with Google auto-completed responses to phrases like "women shouldn't." And if we look at the "women shouldn't" picture, it says "women shouldn't have rights, women shouldn't vote, women shouldn't work, and women shouldn't box." So that's quite shocking that these are common auto-completes for, you know, searches about women. It just reveals that in, you know, many places, you know, women's rights are still kind of put in question a lot of the time. So I thought I'd just mention that. It's from that article. The article was from Adweek, so that's adweek.com. And that's where I found this article, and that's where I also found this visual from XKCD. That's the visual that I was talking about earlier on, the one that has all these crazy auto-completed questions. So let's begin. Now, I'm just going to try and go through the questions, and I'll try and respond to them in my own way. So the first one, first question is, why do whales jump? Why do whales jump? Now, you know what a whale is, like a big mammal that lives in the sea, like a killer whale or a sperm whale, a humpback whale, blue whale. Why do whales jump? Now, okay, I'm not a whale expert by any means, but why do they do that? They do, don't they? Whales, obviously, they live in the sea, but they can't breathe underwater, right? They're mammals. They actually breathe through a hole in the top of their head, the blowhole. I think they can stay under the water for like half an hour or so before having to return to the top to breathe, basically. But they don't need to jump out of the water to breathe. Sometimes whales will emerge from the water in order to catch, in order to eat. They kind of rise to the surface and take a big bite of like lots of shrimp or krill that are near the surface of the water. But again, that's not really why they jump out. But it's a good question. Why do whales jump out of the water and crash down into the water again? I'm not a whale expert, but I suppose it's because it's fun. I suppose they just enjoy doing it. It must be great fun to leap into the air like that and then crash down into the water again. I suppose it's because it's fun. That's my answer to that. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very interested to see what you think about these questions as well. Do you have any answers? Now, we could just Google all of these things. But I'm not just going to record myself doing a long Googling session. You can Google them too. And perhaps you can find out the real answers to this stuff. I probably will Google it later as well. I don't know if I can put that into a recorded podcast episode. Anyway, moving on. Next question. Why are witches green? Why are witches green? A witch, you know what a witch is, don't you? Like evil old woman. They come out at Halloween. You know, they seem to enjoy laughing in an evil way like that. They ride on a broomstick. They often have like a black pointy hat and a black cat. They're typically green. They have a green face with like warts on their nose. A witch. That's how witches laugh, don't you think? So why are witches green? Well, I think probably it's just the appropriate colour for an evil old woman, don't you think? Maybe it's just because from that movie, The Wizard of Oz, there are several witches in that film. The Wicked Witch of the West, the Wicked Witch of the East, I think. And in that film, the witches have a green face. I think it's just, in a movie, it makes the witch seem more like a monster if you give her green skin. It's more scary, more monstrous. And also, it's a bright colour that would look pretty cool in a big Technicolor movie from the 1920s? So that's probably why witches are green, because the idea of a green witch came from an old movie in where it just looks appropriate, it looks evil to make her green. I don't think witches have always been green. I imagine from that film that sort of set a precedent for witches being green. And now we have this musical called Wicked. I think the musical tells the story of the witches from the Wizard of Oz movie. And of course they're green in that musical as well. It just follows on from the fact that the witches were green in the movie. But why are witches green? Green is it's not a particularly attractive colour for a person, really. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it if you are green-skinned. I doubt that there are any green-skinned people listening to this. I don't know, maybe there are some witches listening to this. You know, oh, let's listen to Luke's English podcast. Double bubble, toil and trouble. I shall download Luke's English podcast. I don't know why that witch sounded a bit like Yoda, didn't she? Who also has green skin. Is there a connection? I don't know. But anyway, why are witches green? I think it comes from the Wizard of Oz movie, which had green, evil-looking witches, just as a kind of a way to make them look colourful and evil. Next, why are there mirrors above beds? Okay, why are there mirrors above beds? Well, not all beds have mirrors above them, but some beds do, don't they, ladies and gentlemen? Some beds have a mirror on the ceiling above, or maybe a mirror, you know, positioned above the bed. Well, I imagine that's for sort of sexual reasons. I expect some people enjoy looking at themselves in the mirror when they are, you know, getting off with someone. You know what I mean? When they're, getting involved in a bit of hanky-panky in bed. Sometimes maybe it's exciting to be able to see what's going on from a different angle by looking in the mirror. Uh-huh. So that's probably why there are mirrors above beds, so that people can watch themselves having sex. There you go. I think that's probably the only answer. I can't think of another reason why you would have a mirror above your bed, just so that you could watch, you know, you and your partner can see yourselves from different angles when you're doing it. Yeah, what do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Is there another reason that you'd have a mirror above your bed? I don't know. Next question is, why do I say Why do I say Well, I think a lot of people say things like or or I mean, in Spain it would be eh. in France it's like ba. In Japan it's like eto. In Liverpool it's eh as well. Eh. So Spain and Liverpool have the same sound. Eh. And I go So why do we do these sounds? Well, I suppose it's just, you know, something you, a noise you make while you're trying to think of the next thing to say. It's strange, though. It's sort of psychological, isn't it? Why do we have to make a sound that's not a word? I suppose you've got to get the vocal cords moving. If the vocal cords are moving, it allows you to bring in the next word more easily, perhaps. Yes. It's interesting. It's a very interesting question. I think it's just a little little pause. I suppose that we sometimes start saying a word or start making a sound, and the brain can very quickly turn that sound into a word. And it's a way of having, you know, a way of having some fluency. Now, really, really fluent speakers who are really smart, really clever, are able to talk without going at all. And it requires quite a lot of self-control to make sure that you don't go Now, I suppose it's a habit to an extent, going as a way to pause, to allow yourself to think, but to also keep making some kind of sound. It's a substitute for a word. You want to keep talking, but your brain is catching up with your mouth. So you end up, rather than saying a word, you have to just fill the silence with a sound. I think it's probably a discipline. You have to try hard. You have to focus on not going I'm going to try doing that in this episode, okay? I'm going to try to stop going I just did it then. It's really, really hard. It's very hard to do. I'm going to try and focus on it. Now, I realize that saying that is going to mean that you're now listening for every time I go It's very natural to go when you're talking. So I don't want to set myself some kind of impossible challenge. I'm not going I'm just humming. Yes. Let's carry on though anyway. Why do we say I think I've just explained it, and I've also just set myself a challenge. Don't go or try not to go while recording the rest of this episode, Luke. Okay. Right. Next question. Why is sea salt better? Why is sea salt better? Is sea salt better? Is it? I mean, I suppose this question is about the fact that when you go to the supermarket and you buy some salt, you've got options, haven't you? You've got just standard table salt, and then you have like fancy, posh sea salt crystals. And the sea salt is more expensive than the standard table salt. So it's quite a reasonable question. You might think, well, why is sea salt better? Just because it's from the sea, does that make it better? I mean, you know, like why? It's all salt, isn't it? Whether it comes from the sea or it comes from the not the sea. Why am I paying more for sea salt? I think to an extent this is marketing. It's probably just, you know, marketing people going, right, we need to try and sell more salt. How are we going to do it? Well, sir, I thought maybe we can just say that it's sea salt, and then people are going to think that that's good just because it's from the sea. Ah, good idea. Okay, let's do that. So we're going to market our salt as authentic sea salt from, you know, some special ocean somewhere. Pacific sea salt crystals. And then just that's like a little marketing hook which will perhaps make people buy more salt at higher prices. I wonder what the science is on this. Do you think that sea salt is better salt than you know, salt taken from the ground? We don't really know, do we? But we certainly know that the container that the salt comes in, if it's sea salt, it has like a kind of a nice looking picture of like a wave or some picture of that makes you think of the Atlantic Ocean or something. So it's a more appealing product. The idea that, you know, the mystery of the ocean, that somehow we have extracted authentic sea salt from the sea, this kind of natural place, whereas table salt, it's just very pragmatic, it's very boring. Salt on the table, it's table salt because you put it on the table. There's no mystery, there's no kind of atmosphere to that, is there? Also, you know that table salt or salt that's not from the sea has just been extracted from the ground, and that's also not as glamorous, is it? You just think they just dug it out of the ground with a machine, a big hole in the ground, and they pulled the salt out. I'm sure that salt comes from other places too, But I think it's marketing. I don't think sea salt is particularly better than other salt. It's all the same stuff. It's the same chemical, isn't it? Sodium, I think. So I'm not convinced that sea salt is better. It just has a better image for some reason. I wonder if I'm going to get through all these questions. Let's see. Next question is, why are there trees in the middle of fields? What a weird question. Why are there trees in the middle of fields? Okay, this is probably someone who has been driving along in their car through the countryside and they've looked out of the window and there's lots of fields, and then sometimes in the middle of a field you get a tree and the farmer has to work around this tree. You know, he'll be, let's say, ploughing his field or cutting the crops from the field, harvesting the crops, and there's just a tree in the middle. He has to drive his tractor around the tree. Now, what kind of person would ask that question, really? I mean, this is a person, I suppose, who expects fields to be completely sort of uniformed, completely standardized. A field can only be a field. You can't have a tree in it. You know, why would there be a tree in a field? It's a pretty stupid question, don't you think? I think it's a pretty stupid question. Of course, at one point, most of these fields were just trees. Certainly in England, most of the countryside was just trees everywhere. It was like a big forest. And then, you know, people decided that they would chop the trees down in order to use the land to grow stuff. Fine, that's fine. Agriculture. But I suppose sometimes some trees remain there in the middle of the field because they're too big, you know. Like the farmer doesn't want to chop the tree down because it's too big. He doesn't want to have to do it, and he's quite happy to just drive his tractor around the tree. Trees grow in fields. That's what they do. And if you've got a big tree growing in the middle of your field, you might leave it there. Also, the farmer might decide, well, I like this tree. It's nice. It looks good. That's why he's left it there. Sometimes the tree will be part of the hedgerow, and hedgerows are very important. A hedgerow is like a line of smaller trees, a hedge, like a long, a kind of small tree close to the ground that forms a long hedge. Trees sometimes form part of the hedgerow, and the hedgerow is very important for dividing your fields up. And it could be a dividing line between two different farms. But also the hedgerow is an important natural feature because it can protect your field against, like, wind. If you have a very large open field, then the wind can just blow across the field and damage your crops. So sometimes if you break up the field with hedges, then that can provide some protection. So maybe the tree is just a feature of the hedgerow. Or maybe the farmer has decided, no, I'm going to leave this tree here because, you know, animals live in it. You know, maybe there's an owl's nest in the tree. And because the farmer is someone who likes nature and he decides that he doesn't want to deprive animals of their natural habitat, he's going to leave the tree there. I don't think it's a good question, because if you see a tree in a field, surely you should be thinking, that's a nice looking tree. Trees are beautiful things. They provide oxygen. You shouldn't be thinking, no, I don't know why there's a tree there. That stands out. That's not consistent with the rest of this environment. Therefore, let's remove it. No, that's a stupid question. Let's move on to the next one. Why is there not a Pokemon MMO? I need to know what MMO means. MMO, I suppose, is a kind of computer game. I think it's some sort of multiplayer online computer game format. I'm just checking out the real definition of the word MMO. Okay, MMO definition. All right, great. I'm using my girlfriend's computer, and of course it's all in French. I wonder sometimes what my audience thinks about the fact that I'm living in France. But my position on it is, although this is Luke's English podcast and it's real British English, I believe in a kind of multicultural world And I also believe that Britain is, although it's an island, it's not an island. You know what I mean? Britain is actually part of Europe and it's part of the rest of the world. So I don't think there's anything wrong with being abroad when I do Luke's English podcast. I'm still British. I'm still, Luke's English podcast is still a British English podcast, but I can do this anywhere I want. That's the magic of the internet. I could be anywhere. I could be in Ecuador. I could be in Colombia and I'd still be doing Luke's English podcast. I could be in, Chile. I could be in Goa in India. I could still be doing Luke's English podcast. I could be living in Japan again, in Tokyo. I would still be doing Luke's English podcast and it would still be pretty much the same thing. Massive multiplayer online game. Okay, a massive multiplayer online game. So the question is, why is there no Pokemon, like, online multiplayer game? It's a pretty good question, isn't it, I suppose? Because Pokemon is such a huge franchise, such a popular franchise. You'd have thought that they would launch some kind of big online platform for Pokemon. I suppose you'd have to contact Nintendo to ask about that. Is Pokemon a Nintendo-owned franchise? If it is, then I wonder if Nintendo has any MMO games, because it might be a Nintendo strategy not to to make multiplayer online games. I'm sure they have some. I'm sure that the Nintendo Wii allows you to go online and play against other people. Anyway, Pokemon MMO. It would be pretty cool, because Pokemon is an extremely popular game franchise. Maybe they're developing it. Maybe that's the thing. Now, next question. Why is there laughing in TV shows? Why is there laughing in TV shows? Well, okay, this question is about canned laughter. Can, like a can, you know, a can of Coke. A tin can, aluminium can. Canned laughter, that refers to the fact that in some TV shows you get, like, fake laughter added over the top. So it'd be, you know, particularly in American shows, if you can picture some kind of typical American TV show set in someone's house, and the dad comes home from work. "Hi, honey, I'm home." And the audience goes, "Ha, ha, ha." It's really annoying, that kind of canned laughter. But I suppose it's because it's a subconscious thing. And if you're watching a TV show and there's a laughter track, it subconsciously is telling you, this show is funny, okay? It's psychology. It's a pretty good question, because now, in my experience of doing comedy, it helps the gig if other people are laughing, right? If you get, you know, some people in the audience laughing, then you'll find that the rest of the audience then will start laughing too, because laughing is infectious. Okay, if other people laugh, it somehow adds colour to the jokes and it makes the whole thing a lot funnier. So subconsciously, if you're watching a TV show and you hear laughter, it's basically telling you where the jokes are. It's telling you where you should be laughing. It's like a signpost for, this is a funny bit, that's a funny bit. Sometimes people just need a little trigger to, you know, help them to enjoy the show. But I think these days people are pretty clever and quite comedy literate. People know when they're supposed to find it funny. And also, comedy shows these days are quite detailed, quite subtle, full of little nuances. It's not just simple joke, you know, not a joke, joke, not a joke, joke. Often TV shows now are very complex and, you know, they're full of varying degrees of humour. Some things are like understated jokes, some things are big jokes, some things are ironic, some things are actually pretty serious. And so it's not appropriate to have a laughter track. If you watch shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm or The Office or all kinds of other modern comedy shows, you'll see that they often don't have laughter tracks. I actually think it's better these days that shows don't have laughter tracks, because, you know, it gives you, an audience member, a bit more freedom to decide which things you find funny and which things you've, you know, find to be serious or whatever. So a lot of shows now are more subtle. They don't have the laughter track, thank goodness. Although there is actually another point there. Some TV shows are filmed in front of a live audience, like Friends used to be filmed in a studio with an audience watching it. And so that laughter that you hear in Friends is real audience laughter. It's not like fake laughter added afterwards, but real laughter. So again, that just creates a certain atmosphere in a show, which you know, adds a certain kind of energy and fun to proceedings when you hear other members of the audience enjoying it. It's just comedy, I suppose. It's sometimes these things are necessary. Right, next we've got, why are there doors on the freeway? Why are there doors on the freeway? That doesn't make sense. I don't know what that means. I think this is an American question. The freeway, I suppose, is like the motorway. Are there doors on the freeway? I don't understand that question. If you're in America and you understand what that means, then please leave a comment on this explaining it, because I don't know what that means. Maybe that means that the freeway, there are barriers on the sides of the freeway, like fences or something, and in sometimes you see doors. Maybe the freeway has like concrete barriers and there are doors in the barriers. I assume that there are doors in the freeway to allow people to access the freeway on foot. But I don't really understand that. Next question. Now, I can't read that question because it's too small. So the next one is, why aren't there any countries in Antarctica? Oh, dear, that sounds like a stupid question, wouldn't you say? Why aren't there any countries in Antarctica? Okay, maybe it's not. Maybe it's not a stupid question. Antarctica is in the southern hemisphere. I think technically it's a continent, but why are there no countries there? I think it's because it's not really inhabited, and I think the land is sort of disputed territory. Because it's so uninhabitable, it's so difficult to live there, no one has really made the step to populate it, and as a result, there has been no need for setting up borders and setting up things like governments and administrations for those areas and leaders and civilians and stuff like that. You know, all the things that you need, laws and some kind of passport issuing agency. I suppose that's why, because no one lives on Antarctica, and so there's no need for any kind of system of dividing the continent into countries. But I do believe that we're moving in that direction, because I think that different countries have sort of started to lay out some borders on Antarctica, and we're moving towards a situation where really Antarctica is just owned by different countries in the rest of the world. So America has a bit, Russia has a bit, and so on. It could be interesting to see how this develops, because there may be some disputes over who owns which parts of Antarctica, but there are no independent states within in Antarctica itself. I suppose oil has something to do with this as well. There's probably some access to fossil fuels via Antarctica. Why are there scary sounds in Minecraft? Well, I don't play Minecraft, so I can't explain why there are scary sounds. Probably scary sounds to create a scary atmosphere, which makes the game more fun, I suppose. But I don't know what the scary sounds are in Minecraft. Next question. Why is there knocking? Why is there kicking in my stomach? Wow, that's one hell of a question. Why is there kicking in my stomach? Okay, all right. That's a little bit worrying, that question. If you're typing that question, why is there kicking in my stomach? Now, if you're a girl typing that, that might mean that you're pregnant, okay? If you can feel kicking coming from inside your abdomen, you might want to get a pregnancy test done. That might mean that you've got a person inside you growing. A person which will, a person which will, in a few months, probably decide to leave your body and enter the world, and then you'll have to look after it, okay? It's a human being that you'll have to care for. So if you've got kicking coming from inside you, it could be a baby. You might want to just check that out. You know, you might want to just think, did I, you know, have I had sex with a lot of people or anyone sort of recently within the last 9 months? Because that could be a baby. Maybe if you've got kicking inside your stomach, I don't know, maybe you've just got indigestion. You might just want to check your diet and see what kind of crazy food you're eating. But kicking, specifically kicking, sounds like a baby to me. And it sounds like quite a well-developed baby too, if it's actually able to kick. So you might want to go and see the doctor about that. And then you might want to just reevaluate your life at that point. If you've got a kid on the way, if you've got a little bun in the oven, you might want to just reassess, just make sure that you've got, you know, you've got whatever is necessary to look after that child when it eventually arrives. Wow. There's always adoption. You can always put the child up for adoption. Hopefully someone will take him on. I don't know why. I don't think people listening to Luke's English podcast are the kinds of people who write these questions on Google. Who knows? Maybe they think that they're going to get the answers to this stuff. In fact, they are. They're getting the answers to this stuff in this episode. Let me just check the time. 35 minutes, okay. I'm going to sort of try and move through these questions a little bit more quickly and maybe be a bit more selective. Why are there two slashes after HTTP? It's true, isn't it? HTTP:// I don't know the answer to that. You need some kind of, web specialist, some IT person. Some of my listeners know all about these things. Why are there two forward slashes after HTTP:? Let me know. Now, next question. Why are there celebrities? Why do celebrities exist? That's a really good question, I think, because these days celebrities just dominate so much of our news. So much media attention is given to celebrities. Why is this? It's pretty interesting. Now, I'm going to try and answer this question. I suppose maybe there's something natural within us which likes to observe others. We like to look at others, other people. So in some kind of, in a nosy way, we like to observe what other people are doing in their lives. We can check them out. It's just fun to watch other people and to investigate other people's lives. I think maybe it's a kind of a natural instinct for us. We need to pry into other people's business as a way of like learning about how other people live, which then gives us a bit of perspective on our lives. But celebrities are different, aren't they? They're not just other people. Celebrities are, I suppose, what people that we have decided are exceptional in some way. And so they provide some kind of, I don't know, I guess some kind of model that we can aspire to. But I know that a lot of people don't look up to celebrities. So maybe there's something about the fact that we enjoy observing other people, particularly people we think are exceptional, like exceptionally good-looking, exceptionally talented people. And we look up to them and we sort of live vicariously through their lives in a way. You know, if you've got like a favorite movie star, you want to find out about their relationships and things like that, because you start to get to know that person. You build some sort of weird relationship with them. Maybe you can sort of almost live some experiences through them. You know, they provide some kind of ideal version of a person that we can aspire to be. So if you, for example, it would be awesome to live like a celebrity, maybe. Like Johnny Depp, he's so kind of cool. He has so many great friends. He's friends with people like Paul McCartney and Keith Richards. It would be amazing to not only hang around with those people, but to have those people give you respect because of all the great work you've done, all the good movies you've been in. It would be amazing to live in that level of society. So maybe we idealize these people a bit and we live through them somehow. But also, I think a lot of it's to do with just commercial industry-related things. The fact that now celebrities are part of a big business. I mean, show business. It's a very, very lucrative, very, very big money-making industry. So this means that celebrities are used as products, basically. So you've got the media, TV, newspapers, and the rest of it, all the internet and everything, movie industry, the music industry, entertainment industry in general. Celebrities are their product. And so they kind of use celebrities to get our attention. And then once they've got our attention, then they can make money from that by, you know, getting advertising contracts, by selling their movie products to us, things like that. So it's an industry. So the celebrities are just a product in the wider industry of show business. But I think there's something else, some other human thing here, which is that, you know, we're drawn to observing these people that we've decided are special. Now, there are some celebrities that I just don't understand. I don't understand why they're celebrities. And I think some people, it's really a case of just really careful business management rather than genuine sort of charisma, talent, or interest in them personally. Like, and I'm not even going to mention the name of this family that I'm talking about, but I think you know who I mean. There's a family in America who are famous for nothing. They're famous for being celebrities. They're famous just because they've got contacts, they've got connections with the showbiz world, and they decided as a career choice, as a family, that they would just do everything they could to make money by selling their images, selling their lives to the media, letting the public consume their identities, their lives and everything. So they did reality shows to allow people to get a glimpse of their lives, their glamorous Hollywood lives. They publish pictures of themselves. They publish video footage of their weddings. They sell their stories to newspapers. And this is all carefully managed. It's a very carefully managed business. I'm not going to mention the name of this family just because I think Luke's English Podcast should be a place where this name is never mentioned. And I believe that because I personally don't think they have anything to offer other than the fact that they've got an incredibly efficient marketing and publicity machine working for them. I'm not going to mention the name, but I think you know who I'm talking about. Now, what have they really done? Now, I understand Paul McCartney. He's a huge celebrity because of the things that he's given us. He's given us great music. Music is a for me, music is a high level form of art. It's real aesthetic beauty in the form of, first of all, like hard work. You know, to make good music, you need to work very hard, which is then combined with a sort of talent to create beautiful, majestic, artistic pieces. So Paul McCartney wrote with John Lennon and the other guys in the Beatles some beautiful, moving music, music which touches your soul, music which can help you to learn about your emotions and learn about the world, music which can heal you. If you're feeling sad or depressed, broken, you can listen to your favorite song by your favorite artist, and it actually contributes to making you feel better, and it's like food for the soul. So I understand why Paul McCartney is celebrated as a celebrity, but then people who are just famous for doing a sex tape, I just don't think we should give them our attention because it only makes them stronger. So mentioning their name is only going to help them in the end because it's like giving them extra publicity. So I'm not going to mention their names. Why are they celebrities? But it's a very good question. I think it's something to do with our culture and something to do with our human nature that we need or want these people in lights on our TV screens. Okay, the next question is, on one hand, ridiculous, but on the other hand, strangely existential and interesting. The question is, why do snakes exist? Right, okay. Why do snakes exist? Well, okay, it's kind of a stupid question because why? I mean, it's not like animals exist for a particular purpose, in my opinion. I think probably if you ask, you know, scientists who are the people who really spend a lot of time and energy trying to answer these questions, a scientist would probably say, well, snakes exist because they manage to adapt to their environment. I mean, over millions and millions of years, snakes have just found a niche in the world which allowed snakes to exist. So I think snakes exist because the world has allowed them to exist, because they survived and because they managed to adapt to survive in the world. It's really a question of evolution. I suppose at some point, billions of years ago, when life on Earth was pretty basic, a lot of life that we have now started from a similar place, like very basic single cell life forms, and over millions of years, like millions, it's over such a long period of time that we can hardly even hold the idea in our minds. Over millions of years, this life diversified and found its way into different conditions in the world. And through, over a very long period of time, certain life forms didn't survive. Some life forms did survive because they were suitable for those conditions. So I suppose snakes have survived because they've just found themselves to be, suitable for certain conditions. So snakes are actually a very well designed by evolution. This kind of raises a big question about the origins of life. Some people believe that snakes exist because God designed them to exist. He created the world, and he kind of created all the animals that we have, and he put them all on Earth, and he has got some sort of plan. We don't know what his plan is. So some people believe it's God. Some people believe that these creatures just sort of develop in a very, very, very complicated way, through the process of evolution. These animals manage to survive, and so their genes get passed on to the next generation, and certain genetic mutations occur over very long periods of time, which mean that these species sort of start to develop in different directions. For example, the snake develops, a certain kind of skin, and it, through millions of years of genetic mutation, evolution is a much more complicated idea to hold in your head than the idea of intelligent design. I'm not completely sure, you see. Now, I know that I tend to side with the idea of evolution myself, but I still don't think that covers everything. There's still the question of why does life want to survive? Why does life even exist in the first place? And if evolution is a sort of the result of the laws of physics and the laws of chemistry and the laws of the universe, why do these laws even exist? So there are lots of questions which science doesn't answer. But then again, just because science doesn't have the answer to those questions, it doesn't mean that we then have to provide answers by saying that it was God who did it. See, that's one of the arguments that religious believers or believers in God use. The idea that we don't know why the universe exists, therefore God created it. And the argument against that is that just because we don't know why the Earth exists or why the universe exists, it doesn't therefore follow that it was God who did it. It's just like saying, it's like the UFO example. If you look into the sky and you see something in the air and you don't know what it is, there's no logic in the idea that it's therefore aliens. Just because we don't know what it is, I mean, that's the end, really. I don't know what it is. That's it. Stop. You don't know what it is. You can't then conclude that it's one thing. It could be anything. So this is really a question of the existence of God at this point. Wow, this got really deep. I hope you follow what I'm saying. There is a name for that argument, the argument of I don't know what it is, therefore it's God. For example, we don't know what happens after we die, therefore we go to heaven. You know, there is a name for that argument. I can't think of the name right now. But it's a common argument used by people who believe in the existence of God. Yes, I'm not completely sure. I'm not going to lay all my cards on the table. I'm not going to put all my eggs into one basket and say that there is definitely no God. But I'm also not going to I'm not going to just assume that God designed things just because I don't understand how the world exists. There you go. So I suppose for me, I guess I'm kind of atheist, but I guess I'm agnostic. Agnostic means that I'm not really sure. Maybe there's a God, maybe there isn't. So I suppose I'm agnostic, but I also kind of lean towards atheism. The atheistic arguments tend to make more sense to me. But I also agree that, you know, religion has a kind of place in the world. Some people say that religion has done more damage than good. But I also think that religion helps a lot of people. You know, for example, if you're an alcoholic or a drug addict who requires belief in a higher power to rescue you from a very damaging habit, which you can't escape in any other way, if you need to grasp some sense of faith or higher power as a way of saving yourself, then, you know, fair enough. I'm not going to deny people the right to do that. So I also see that, you know, religious belief has helped a lot of people. Should religious believers try to push their religious beliefs on others? I don't think so. I don't think if you believe in God, I don't think then you should force me to believe in God too. I think we should be all free to believe whatever we want. It's a free country. It's a free earth. It's a free earth, man. Now, I'm going to pause this because I need to blow my nose. Because as you can hear, I'm recovering from a cold. It's another reason why I've been a little bit quiet recently. I've just been suffering from hard work and a bad cold and all kinds of other things. So I'm going to pause the podcast now, and then we will resume in just a moment. You're not going to realize that I've paused it, because through the magic of digital editing, it's going to make no difference. But I'm now going to pause time and go and blow my nose, and I'm going to come back. Hopefully when I come back, my voice is going to sound a little bit clearer. Let's see, shall we? Okay, I'm back again. I wonder if you can tell the difference between my voice then and my voice now. You're probably thinking, doesn't sound much different, Luke. Well, I have just blown my nose. It feels better. But I'm developing a slightly itchy cough. So I think I'm just going to do a couple of other questions, and then I'm going to call it a day on this episode. But I'm really enjoying this episode, because some of these questions are crazy, but they kind of reveal, they're quite deep questions in some cases. Like, for example, why do snakes exist? It's a very, very deep question, really. I've had an idea, which is a good way to develop some interaction in this episode. So obviously I'm just sort of improvising my own responses to these questions. But what you can do is, after listening to this, or while you're listening to it, you can like verify my answers by going onto Google and actually typing in the question. You'll probably find that Google will auto-complete the question for you. So you don't even have to do much typing. And then you do some research and find out sort of the best answers for these questions. And then you can verify whether I was correct. Did I answer the question in the right way? Was I completely wrong or not? Have a look on Google and see what you find. And then you can just add comments to this podcast to just, you know, give us, to share a bit more information about some of these questions. And I think that would be a good way for you to kind of interact and like respond with, you know, some more information. I think that's probably a good idea. This picture that I'm talking about has got so many questions on it, and some of them are brilliant questions. I really, really can't wait to talk about some of this stuff. But I'm going to have to stop here now because I've just got to give my voice a bit of a rest. I hopefully will come back to this picture and deal with more of these questions later on. So thanks very much for listening to Luke's English Podcast. You're doing a very, very good thing, aren't you? Of course you are. It's good for your English. Absolutely. If you have any responses, you can add comments. And thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. That's all for me for this episode. And it just remains for me to wish you a very, very happy day, night, evening, morning, whatever it is. And goodbye. Bye. 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 Bye.
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.